Hello, friends, and welcome to the show. You know, we are inundated right now with challenges with COVID-19, but you know, there is a group of individuals right now who are thinking about challenges even greater than that, and that is military folks who are transitioning into civilians. Now, having made this transition myself many years ago, I can still remember the stress of having to leave the comfort of a regular paycheck and go into a place where there were so many unknowns. As an HR professional, part of your job is to be able to recruit great talent from the military, but also be able to provide the resources some of those new hires need as they transition into this new workplace. There's nobody better to talk about a subject like this than somebody who's done it successfully themselves. Our guest today is Ryan Sweeney. Now, I was connected to Ryan Sweeney through LinkedIn and some contacts, and we had a really nice chat about what his transition was like, but also some thoughts he has not only for other veterans, but also for companies as they are considering looking into this very unique and extremely talented talent pool. He's a great guy. He has successfully made this transition. He's got big plans for the future. So let's quit talking about Ryan. Let's just talk to him. You know what to do. Make sure that seatbelt is tightly fastened across your hips and that personal items underneath the seat. It's time to take off.
Should the cabin lose pressure, oxygen masks will drop from the overhead area. Please place the mask over your own mouth and nose before assisting others. Hello, and welcome to another episode of the HR Oxygen Podcast, the show focused on the overworked, overwhelmed, and underappreciated HR professional. And now, here is the host of our show, the Boss Builder, Mac Monroe.
Ryan Sweeney, welcome to the show.
Hey, appreciate you taking the time, Mac, to let me on here and kind of share what I bring to the table and what veterans bring to the table for the HR and business community.
Yeah, I think it's really important that we do this. You know, I don't know the current stats, but and of course, the current situation, we don't try not to date stamp these, but if you're listening to it now and it's live, you know that there's factors that are now impacting everybody's work. But in terms of regular transition, more and more, I'm hearing like from Fort Campbell, the number is astounding, the amount of people who are leaving the military every month. And I also know from my work with corporations that hiring and recruiting is a challenge. And so in a perfect world, we have this large amount of service members leaving and job openings to fill. The question is, though, how do our HR professionals learn the lingo and understand the life and the mindset and the experience that veterans bring? And that's the reason, Ryan, I really wanted to have you on the show, Ryan. You have made a successful transition, and these are some things that you're really focused on. So I'm going to give you the microphone, Ryan, and I'd like you to tell us, starting with your background, tell us what you did in the military and talk to us about your transition.
Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate it, Max. So I was 10 years in the military, active duty. I did a few years enlisted while I was still in college, but the bulk of it was 10 years active duty as an Army aviator. I was a Black Hawk pilot, and mostly my time was in operations through what the Army would call the S3 shop, but really just project management, operational management, daily task, workflow, and then long-term kind of or medium to short-term plans to execute for the units. I did spend what we would call green tabber time, or that's direct leadership or direct supervision time as a junior leader, as a platoon leader, and then as a company commander when I had the luxury of being stationed out in Hawaii. And that time is what really shaped me, I guess, in the HR field. Having been an ops person my whole life, I had this grandiose scheme of here's how we're going to execute operationally, maintenance-wise. And I realized as I took command of a unit that had been on and off again for 12 years deployed to Afghanistan, which was then changing operational focus to the Pacific theater. So different enemy, different threat, different type of operation, just totally different thinking, was that I wasn't going to get any further than the lowest common denominator, so to speak. So I really needed to get buy-in from my junior leaders and get buy-in from all the soldiers within the unit individually. So I literally sat down and did a one-on-one with all 43 people just to get to know face-to-face. Hey, you, this is me, to kind of build that rapport. And then I listened to, you know, where they thought the unit was and what they thought would do better, or what that we could do better as a whole. And I used that to kind of plant and empower some seeds within the organization. And once people started getting that buy-in a little bit more, then I can kind of push my overarching agenda. And my overarching agenda changed from this operational, you know, team that I thought was going to be able to fly over, you know, on the water tops of the Pacific from one island to the next, doing landings on Navy ships and, you know, getting ready to fight a new tech type enemy, to just building and pipelining talent and building breadth and depth within the organization. And I started to build what we call basically our additional duties, and make sure people were just simply trained and qualified, and backing it up from there, identifying the talent within the organization, and also giving, you know, scheduling schooling for those specific tasks, and using that to develop the individual as a growth plan, but then fitting that into the overarching, you know, kind of program, if you will, to grow the whole organization as a whole. And to me, that was my ultimate legacy. As I took over and barely had primary roles filled, more or less secondary roles, and left, and was four levels into the fourth level deep as far as people being identified, people being trained, people being scheduled for school on every single additional duty and every single primary duty. And I handed it to the next individual and said, now you can go forth and have fun and do all the fun training and operations, because you're set for the turnover, and all you have to do is identify that next wave of people that come in. So that's how I tie it to the HR community. And that's how, you know, I believe my legacy leads to where I'm at today. And that is, as I went through my military transition, I originally tried retail management on for size, but learned quickly that it wasn't for me, even despite some Myers-Briggs and some of the other personality tests, and realized that brand was something that it was important in the mission to me, and landed the opportunity with General Electric Aviation to continue to make engine parts for the military and commercial alike, and make what I feel a difference in the world and into a community that I was so deeply rooted in and connected to. And as I finally started to get comfortable at work, I still wanted more. And I started reaching out through the Hiring Heroes program at Fort Campbell, making some connections down there. And then I worked with our human resources team to develop a training and development kind of curriculum, where it was more than just training and development. It was networking. It was identifying strengths and weaknesses of the individuals, identifying strengths and weaknesses in our program so we can improve the processes. We fix our onboarding process in general because of it. And then I wanted more. So after I did that, and that caused me to launch my podcast in support of military transitioners and HR and talent acquisition teams alike, so we can try to get this thing right the first time.
Well, you've really got a real heart for this. But I mean, I can't really speak to Army. I mean, I was Navy, but there was nobody I ever experienced in the Navy that ever wanted to help me prepare for any other career except for the one that I was in. Did you find that you ever had any pushback from people saying, you know, Ryan, why are you helping these people? They need to be focusing on their jobs today. Did you ever experience that?
Not as much, because honestly, I just didn't. I didn't really ask. I just knew it was the right thing to do within the organization, because I would not have been able to continue to lean on, you know, that top 10%, if you will, for a significant period of time. And those colors end up showing, because my quick little story is I was supposed to change out of command, and an opportunity came down to support President Obama's trip to India. It originally, the Marines could not pick up the mission, so it was given to our company that was on the quick response force. And eventually, they were not able to accomplish the mission, both from a training aspect and from an administrative aspect. And it slowly went from me supplementing this other commander's team to it was all my individuals. So they extended my command so I can go out to support that. And to me, that was what allowed me to prove to the senior leaders within the organization that, hey, this org development and this breadth and sacrificing a little bit in the short term and able to gain the long term is what was the right thing to do.
Okay. Yeah, I'm just curious. You know, I had for a while and I think they still probably call the program TAP. I know it was SFL, and I can't remember what they call it now in the Army, but I was doing one, this was probably 12 years ago, and it was a very senior 06 emailed me, and I wasn't supposed to, but I always told everybody, you have access to me, you can ask me any questions. And this guy, 06, being ready to retire after 30 years, and he emailed me, he says, hey, can you help me with a resume? He says, I'm out next Friday, and I haven't had time. And I said, well, of course I can help you. But inside I was thinking, you got to be kidding me. You do realize that next week when you're out of the Navy, it'll be 6 months and you will be long forgotten. This last minute push to finish hard at the end, I admire it. But this poor guy had never, I think, thought about what life was going to be like after the military. And it sounds to me, Ryan, like you had this end game in mind all along. Is that pretty clear?
Well, I did not. And in fact, I had an end game with General Electric. But that was really it. And it took me 2 years to crack that end game. And it took a lot of, networking and a lot of push and not letting go, to get that, finally get that opportunity. But up until that point, I did exactly what ACAP or TAP or SFL taught me to do. And that was what the military does. And that's move one step forward at a time, get a stamp at this location and move to your next location. And what are my skills, and let's put those on paper, and then let's articulate them in bullet format. Now I got a resume, now let me clean up the format. And I didn't focus on who I was, and it's what I like to refer to as backward planning. In the military, we're taught backward planning from actions on the objective, and I think that goes for all life in general, that you're not going to find where you're going until you know who you are and what you're striving for, what you want to go for. So in civilian terms, unless you're jumping on the Harley, you're not going to just get out and go for a ride, so to speak. You have an end state that you're going to. And that's what I'm trying to get through to the heads of some of these individuals, like the person that you're discussing here. So they're not planning just 6 days out and hoping what, falls in their lap next, so to speak.
Yeah. In your experience, did you find that there was a lot of people that were, I mean, so maybe the Navy is different, but you ask anybody what they want to do, they're like, I want to get out of the Navy. And even people who've done 20 years and are looking forward to retirement. But did you find that there was there a larger percentage of people that said, I know what I'm going to do when I get out of the Army versus I'm going to get out, then I'll figure it out? What was the percentage you saw?
No, I think it's mostly people don't know what they want to do, or they think they know what they want to do, but that is basically something that the Army is telling them what they want to do, and it's telling them what they're good at or what their skill set is. And today it seems like everybody getting out of the military is an operations manager or a project manager.
or they're an HR specialist. I see that one a lot because they carried paper over to the personnel department.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. And they don't know what their interests are, and then they don't know who they truly are. So that's why I push, using the work breakdown structure or using a fishbone diagram or using something that breaks down what you did or what your skill set was to the lowest level. So you can truly identify, where your strengths and where your interests are. So you know where to set that stage of that end state or where you want to go with it.
So in your experience, Ryan, and I'm going back to mine. I came in the Navy to go to dental technology lab school because I did it on the outside. And I like everybody says, I got screwed over. There was no opening in the school once I started dental assisting school. So basically, I came in doing a job I never wanted to do in the first place and just kind of rode that wave for 15 long years. Do you find, or did you find when you were in, that a lot of people had that same experience? Or was this, when you talk to them, they're saying, man, I am on the path I want to be right now. Everything has fallen into place the way I expected.
Yeah, I think that's a big reason why a lot of people get out. I mean, I know it's a big reason why I got out. So my goal was to be a company commander. I achieved that goal. And then I got my master's and bachelor's in history and educational administration. So I enjoy teaching, coaching, and mentoring people. So I said, I want to go back to the schoolhouse or ACE college and ROTC program, whatever the case is. I want to train the next level of people. I want to do what we did in World War II and send our ACEs home instead of doing the opposite, instead of sending the guys who aren't really qualified or the gals who aren't so good and send them back to the schoolhouse. And I was told, no, the next 5 years are planned for you. And this is what you're going to do. And I just started scratching my head and going, well, the first 10 years were planned for me. Now the next 5 years are planned. So basically that's going to bring me to close to 20 years. So what am I doing here? Now is kind of my opportunity to get out and start fresh. And I think that resonates with a lot of people that really get into that deep level thinking beyond the military and what the military has to offer and what, you know, corporate America has to offer.
Well, I think it's a lot to ask a person at the age of, let's just say 18, you know, what do you want to do when you grow up? Because again, I really didn't know. And I did not know until I think I was 33. And then kind of like you, once you figure it out, you're like, it's kind of like that line from the movie, we had Meg Ryan and Billy Crystal. What the name was that movie? I forget. But anyway, he says, when you find the person you want to spend the rest of your life with, you want the rest of your life to begin as soon as possible. And that's kind of how I felt when I hit the age of 33. I'm like, okay, I know what I want to do. I want out. But I think I was unusual that way. And that almost sounds, from what you've told us, Ryan, kind of how it was for you. You finally discovered it and said, let's do it. Let's get on with it now.
Yeah, and I think it's trending more that way. I mean, it's no surprise the Department of Defense is going to more of a corporate structure where they're going to get rid of the pension and they kind of want, you know, the salary is the highest cost, and they rather fight a more modern tech war. In order to do that, they're going to have to decrease salary, and they're going to have to find a way to train younger people better, faster, I guess. So I think this is going to become more common. You're going to see less of the lifers and get out, and then if I don't figure it out for a little while, I have that pension to retire on. That's going to go bye bye. So you're going to see a lot of churn through a lot faster, and it's going to force people to soldiers and military personnel alike to really kind of plan for that end state a little bit more.
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, I can remember when I was in a long time ago, you know, I'd say, what are you going to do when you retire? Oh, well, I may work a job for a couple of years, then I'll just retire. And, you know, when I was a 21-year-old kid, somebody who was 39 or 40 looked ancient. So it made sense to me until I turned around one day and looked and I saw people who were 30 and 39 and 40 and thought, God, these people are young. And so it's a real mindset shift. And I don't know, you know, I'm not going to ask you how old you are, Ryan. I can tell you at the age of 55, God, every year just flies by. So, you know, I guess I would encourage anybody, if you were thinking about making a career transition, don't wait too long, because boy, time does fly.
Yeah. So, and the one thing that really struck with me on that point was people said, well, you're at your 10-year mark, you're at your halfway point. Why not just suck it up for another 10 years so you can get that pension, that retirement? And where it really resonated was, that's the prime of my life. And to your point, yeah, when I felt like I was 18, I thought I was in my prime then. When I was 26, I was in my prime then. And then I was 32 and I was in my prime then, you know. So, you know, so there isn't a real prime of your life, so to speak. But I said, you know, those are like, you know, that's where I want to develop a family, you know, try to maybe settle down in location. And I'm not going to just suck up the prime years of my life so I can have a regular paycheck, but still have to go and work there after that. You know, so it was that's what kind of started ringing with me.
Yeah, it's funny stuff. Well, let's talk about this from the HR professional's perspective. So there are really two ways a person could look at this. I've worked with some companies that said, you know, we really want to focus reaching out and hiring veterans. And so, you know, people go out with this intention to try to find them. And then there are others that look at a veteran and they look at this resume that's, you know, basically just a copy paste from their last fitness report, and they look at it and don't understand a thing on it. And they make some assumptions. So we're really dealing now with, in many cases, unless people know a guy like you or maybe me, an HR professional has no idea what someone in the military can even bring. So what would you, where would you tell the HR professionals to start so they could figure out how to decipher all of this stuff that's going to be coming out?
That's the great thing about kind of what I was talking about there. As far as veterans, one of the proponents is I think you, whether you directly do it or indirectly do it, you leverage that individual. And we're used to it as veterans with additional duties. So nobody told me to build a Hiring Our Heroes, you know, training and development plan. It's just, it was my education background wrapped in with my military background that said, hey, I see an opportunity. We're a small plant in a small town. We have trouble pipelining talent. So I'm going to go after and find a way to pipeline some talent. And then, you know, we all become, we start to lose the number of friends we have in the military. So you have to keep that kind of fresh pool going. And depending on the size of your organization, that might be one person or that might be a dozen people or even more. So I think that's where you know, one of the areas you can easily just start at. But then I will argue that I completely get it. It makes sense. Like, we are, the veterans are the one percenters, and you play the statistics, and it doesn't make a whole lot of sense for corporations to go out there and go after veterans in a statistics game. But you also start to take a look at things like Jim Collins and Good to Great, and you just value, when you start to value character, and maybe you can sacrifice some technical skill and train them there and get what values align within your organization and start taking a look at some of that deeper stuff, then you're starting to talk about the quality and caliber that a veteran brings to the table. And again, you go back to, you know, starting with your veterans. And if it's not a veteran, then veterans that you know or somebody you know of somebody, that they're more, most of them are more than willing to happy to help. And I guarantee you, if somebody reached out to you, just like if somebody reached out to me, Mac, that you and I would at least give some amount of our time to help that HR team or that talent acquisitions team understand a resume or understand a skill set or understand just, you know, veterans in general, because we want to see, you know, our brothers and sisters in arms succeed.
Yeah, I think that's what a lot of people may not understand. And I can tell you, I complain probably most every day I was in the military. And when I got out, it was like the happiest day of my life. But the thing that's so amazing is that I found myself, and still to this day, drawn back to that community to reach out and say, let me help you. Because there was plenty of people that helped me in that journey, even though I don't think I even deserved it. And so that is a very loyal group. And again, we can't stereotype or generalize all people getting out of the military are going to be a certain way. But I think for the most part, what you do learn, whether you want to or not, is that you're really loyal to your team. And so that's why I think you and I both share the same passion, that we want to help these folks find their second careers and really flourish in those second careers and bring the wisdom of just age and the wisdom of experience to companies. Because again, you may not get from, let's say, a 25-year-old who's gone to college for 4 years and worked a few years, you're not going to get the same background as somebody who was in the military for 4 years and they're getting out at the age of 25 or 24. You may have someone, at least, I don't know, was like in the Army, you could have somebody at pay grade E2 who has maybe 30 people reporting to them. So, you know, you get a lot of good management experience. Now, it doesn't mean you're going to be a great boss. It just means you've been used to it. So, you know, it'd be a little bit of chipping off some of the rough edges. But we know now that there's going to be plenty of talent. HR folks out there, I think, are going to need to be able to look at it. So in terms of thinking about transferable skills, Ryan, what are some of the most commonly talked about transferable skills that military folks bring to civilian companies?
I appreciate you asking that, Mac, because I think there, you know, everybody falls back on the soft skills, right? And, you know, I'll be honest, my first transition, I fell back on leadership, my soft skill. And when I was working a, you know, at a gas station, my leading by example that I did in the military did not work. My employees were happy to let me lead by example. And now I had to grow and adapt in some shape and form too, as a good leader should. But at the same time, I realized it wasn't for me, that in leading in that industry wasn't, I couldn't make that big enough of a change. So you're going to have those soft skills, but you're also going to get a lot of those hard skills that some of these folks in the services just don't understand they have. And, you know, one that comes to mind is process improvement, right? So we're all about standardization and we're all about making things as lean as possible, even though we might not be able to spell lean when we're in the military. That's what we are. We're about reducing waste, and it might not fall around a budget. We might not manage money, so to speak, but we manage flight hours and blade hours and maintenance hours and people hours. And we're budgeting all sorts of resources, especially when you start to get in some of those lower level leadership positions where you kind of, you know, you get what you get. So I think process improvement is definitely one. I think personnel resource management kind of coincide with that process improvement, but the ability to really prioritize, that's one thing that I see on a daily basis in the business world. Is that everything's a priority, right? Especially when it comes down to profit and loss for an organization. But if everything's a priority, is anything really a priority? Well, it military is ingrained to, there's a main effort, there's a shaping effort, there's another shaping effort, a sustaining effort, and everything's focused around that mission and that priority and that end state. So you take that as something that individuals bring to the table as well. And I mean, I think the list really, truly kind of goes on and on. It depends on who you're talking to, and that's what we'll get into it. But that's the point of my podcast. I mean, you have military intelligence people who are used to pouring through data, and data analytics is certainly a strong side for them as they try to paint the picture of the enemy for the good guys to go out and figure out what to do. As a pilot, data analytics, I mean, I had to figure out if I had enough weight or had to burn off more fuel and could land at a one wheel landing on top of an 18,000 foot mountain on Afghanistan in, you know, the matter of a minute or less than a minute. So analyzing all the data that's being provided for me at the aircraft right then and there. So, I mean, that's one of them too. I mean, the list truly does go on and on. We are not that good at telling the story of what, you know, skills correlate to the business world and what we bring to the table, because we just think everything is operations and basically.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm going to ask you one more question, then I want to hear about the podcast and how we can get a hold of you. What are some of the most, I guess, egregious misconceptions that civilians might have about people getting out of the military?
Yeah. So I guess, I don't know if it's on the civilians or on both sides of the house. It's like location. Most of us get out of the military, right? Cause we're sick of, one of the things is we're sick of moving every 3 years, and we kind of sell ourselves that we're done moving and we're not going to move, but yet we're here. We are, most of us, these type A type personality people who aren't going to sacrifice growth as much, and we are going to be open to move. But when we turn around and we say that to an organization, they kind of cut that in stone and say, "Oh, this person's not willing to move." And you have to kind of, you know, that now you kind of pigeonhole or plug them on your organizational growth plan, because they don't really understand the fact that, like, hey, it's not, we're telling you to move every 3 years or something like that. It's, hey, are you willing to move at some point and sometime at the right, with the right opportunity and the right leader? And we as veterans just tend to say no, because we don't understand that we have more control over how and when and where we move throughout the organization as a whole, more or less physically on a map, so to speak.
Okay. Yeah, I hear a lot of this from my HR colleagues. And, you know, I hear one, you know, most military people quit their first job within 6 months because now they know what they like to just quit because it feels good. I've heard that one. I mean, what's your counter to that, Ryan?
My counter to that is, if you can use the Hiring Our Heroes or the Skills Bridge program, that's a win for both sides to assess talent and not assess them if you should necessarily hire them, but assess them of their strengths and weaknesses. Are they strong? They might be a strong communicator and be good at a supervisor, but be bad at running projects or vice versa. So don't use it because they failed in one area that they're going to necessarily mean fail in another area. I think the issue becomes that talent management piece, because the military is so we're so used to being told, like, this is what you expect, this is what you're going to do. And I mean, like, I was dumbfounded on how bad my onboarding process was in my current organization. And I was like, this is absurd. And I think some people, that rubs them a little bit the wrong way. And they leave, well, I'm going to go find a better organization who values me by doing a better onboarding process. But I was smart enough after going through one career change to realize the help fix it instead of help become part of the problem. So, I mean, I think if you understand the value and understand what veterans bring to the table, then they're not going to quit after 6 months, because we want to be loyal. We want to be mission focused. We want to be trained. We want to be taught. We want the opportunity to show our skills. We want the opportunity to develop. And if they are quitting, it's because, you know, sometimes maybe the match is just not right, but otherwise it's because you're not providing some of those opportunities as people leaders and as HR leaders within an organization.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I can speak to Hiring Our Heroes very well. I was part of that program doing some of the training in that. But I'll tell you, people that go through a program like that, I mean, where else are you going to get essentially, what is it, a 10-week test drive? I don't know what it is, 10 weeks, 12 weeks, can't remember what it is. But I'm telling you what, if you can be part of that, I would highly recommend you begin to profile your company. And then you mentioned a couple times SkillsBridge. Tell us about that, Ryan.
So it's basically the same. So Hiring Our Heroes is part of more or less the SkillsBridge program. And the SkillsBridge program, you can basically get onto that program once you get DOD approved for up to a 6-month fellowship or internship instead of the 3-month that Hiring Our Heroes does. And it's going to be a free 6-month basically internship to assess the individual, so to speak. So you can use it as a, hey, free labor, like I think a lot of organizations do. But then are you, now does that go counter to what I just said? Are you really taking the time? That's all you're giving up is time. That's your risk. You're not giving up any financial loss. And you're taking the time to train and develop that individual. And in the process, fixing your own training curriculum, your own developmental, your own onboarding, identifying some of those issues that you have, and then you turn around and kind of selling the organization. And that's how I built ours. It was a sales pitch. I mean, I'm in a small town of 18,000 people that nobody wants to go. I don't want to move to this town. So how do I do that? I have to sell it in some way, shape, or form to them. I'm not going to thump my chest, so to speak, and say that they're all going to come to us because of our brand or our name. I'm going to humble myself and find a way to build off of that program and attract talent.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, the only disadvantage that you have if you're in the Tennessee, Kentucky area is that you're not going to get a sailor to test drive, which, God, that's too bad. But hey, maybe if you're in San Diego, then that's where you want to be. Well, Ryan, we've really enjoyed hearing your story. I want you to tell us now about your podcast, how we get a hold of you, and how you can help companies.
Yeah, I appreciate it, Max. So up front, you know, you can look me up on LinkedIn. It's Ryan Sweeney, 315. And then from there, you can find the links to all my other pages. So I have, you know, the Facebook, the LinkedIn company page. It's called View from the Skies. And then you can also go to the www.viewfromtheskies.weebly.com page, and that's my landing page to send you to my vlog and blog and all that other stuff out there. But at the end of the day, I mean, it's all about bridging this communications gap between both sides. It's a lot easier for me to attract the military talent or the veterans that come on and tell their story about what a Navy CB does and brings to the table, or what an Army aviator does and brings to the table. But I'm really trying to get through to some of these companies that to get out ahead, to stay modernized, to stay with the technology, to realize that, hey, in your sense, when you're driving around Nashville and you're stuck in traffic, I can either listen to the radio or I can get some free advertising and talk about my company and what we offer and what we value from individuals and some of the characters and skills. And it's almost the careers page or your About Us page, an opportunity to kind of just put your brand out there a little bit. And that's what I'm looking to do is get veterans on both sides that are in the mix of all this transition to kind of talk each other's side, understand the communication, and start bridging some of this communication gap, and then creating a library for folks to go after and reference. Like, hey, I just interviewed a Navy linguist. What is that? It was a good interview, but I was scratching my head a few times. So what do they bring to the table other than, skill of language? You know, then maybe they are a fit in they're a fit in my communications department and I don't even know it. And they don't even know it, so to speak. So that's what I'm getting at with the View from the Skies podcast.
Man, that's awesome. Well, Ryan, thanks so much for taking time to chat with us today. And if you're listening to this podcast, please look up Ryan. This is a really valuable talent pool that I think in many cases is not always recognized and certainly underappreciated. So please look him up and consider hiring a veteran for your organization. Ryan, thanks so much for being here.
Appreciate it. Thank you for having me, Mike.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the HR Oxygen Podcast. We hope you found something today that will relieve your stress, feed your soul, and pump you up to face another day. At Boss Builders, we want to let you know that we appreciate the hard work you do every day as an HR professional. And, as a reminder, always make sure to adjust your own oxygen mask before attempting to help those around you. Be well.